Random House Audiobooks presents I Am a Soldier Too, the Jessica Lynch story. This is the author, Rick Bragg. On most nights of the year, this stretch of country road was only a flat place in the dark. But for a few nights in late summer 2003, it blazed in neon, smelled like smoked sausage, spun sugar, and blue ribbon hogs, and rang with screams of people who bought a ticket to be scared. They rode the tilt-a-whirl, browsed tent surprise-winning fruit preserves, and lined up for the cute baby contest. And if there is such a thing as a time machine on this earth, it must be powered by a Ferris wheel at the Work County, West Virginia Fair. She went every year until she left for the Army, said Dee Lynch, Jesse's mother. She'd meet her friends. Everybody knew everybody. You could sit at one end of the thing and watch your kids play at the other end. It never changed. They didn't plan to take her this year, but Jesse wanted to go. She thought she might bump into some old friends. The ping and rattle of the rides and games reached all the way to the parking lot. As Greg Lynch pushed Jesse's wheelchair toward the glow of the midway, over parking lot ruts it had jostled her legs, which were now held together with rods and screws, her pieced-together arm and her back, which had been realigned with steel plates. But she was sick of lying in her adjustable bed at home. It was her first public appearance, her mother said. She wanted to see the cute baby contest, but we never got that far. It started with a polite, shy inquiry from an old man. "Ma'am, can my wife stand by you while I take a picture?" And in seconds, not minutes, but seconds, she was surrounded by people who just wanted to touch her, to say hello, or just to stare at her. The word trickled through the crowd, "Jesse's here." And there was no way to move the wheelchair one more inch farther. "Most people just wanted to shake my hand," Jesse said. One old man told her he had lost two sons and had given up on living, but her story made him ashamed to give up. "It was real nice and stuff," Jesse said. But over and over again, they said the same thing to her. "You're a hero," one person said. "It's an honor to meet a hero." The word bounced from person to person. Hero. An hour passed. The wheels of her chair locked in a circle of adoring people. Hero. "It was weird," Jesse said later, sitting at her kitchen table, her pain medication lined up in front of her beside a glass of chocolate milk. "The very word makes her sad. For 20 years, no one knew my name. Now they want my autograph. But I'm not a hero. If it makes people feel good to say it, then I'm glad. But I'm not. I'm just a survivor. When I think about it, it keeps me awake at night." Southern Iraq, near the Euphrates River, March 2003. The recruiter said she would travel. Now, 20 months after enlistment, 19-year-old Private First Class Jessica Lynch steered her groaning diesel truck across a hateful landscape of grating sand and sucking mud, hauling 400 gallons of water in the rough direction of Baghdad, on a mission that just felt bad. Back home, boys with tears in their eyes had offered to marry her, to build her a brand new house, anything to get her to stay forever in the high, green lonesome. She told him no, told him she was going to see the world. But the recruiter had not told any lies. He offered her a way to make some money for college, so that when this hitch was over, she could become the kindergarten teacher she wanted to be. And he offered a way to escape the inertia of the West Virginia hills, a place so beautiful that a young person can forget, sometimes until she is very old, that she is standing still. In the process, she'd serve her country, something people in her part of America still say without worrying that someone will roll their eyes. She bought it. They all had, pretty much. All the soldiers around her, the sons and daughters of endangered blue-collar workers, immigrant families, and single mothers. A United States Army borrowed from tract houses, brick ranchers, and back roads. The not-quite-beneficiaries of trickle-down economics. They'd traded uncertain futures for dead certain paychecks and a place in the adventure that they'd heard their ancestors talk of as they twisted wrenches, pounded IBM's electrics, and packed lunches for the plants that closed their doors, before the next generation could build a life from them. The military never closed its doors, and service was passed down like a gold pocket watch. Sometimes it was a good, safe bet, all beer gardens and GI bills, and sometimes it was snake eyes, and the soldiers found themselves at a Chosin reservoir, or a Hue, or on a wrong turn to Ann Nazaria. As the convoy of big diesels waddled across the sand, the world she saw was flat, dull, and yellow-brown, except where the water had turned the dust to reddish paste. She got excited when she saw a tree. Trees made sense. She'd grown up in an unrelenting green, where solid walls of hardwood had sunk roots deep into the hillsides and kept the ground pulled tight, as it should be, to the planet. All this empty space and loose shifting sand unsettled her mind and made her feel lost, long before she found out it was true. She was afraid. The big trucks had been breaking down since they left the base in Kuwait, giving in to the grit that ate at the moving parts or bogging down in the mud and sand like wallowing cows. Her convoy, part of the 507th Maintenance Company, was the tail end of a massive supply line that stretched from the Kuwaiti border through southern Iraq, a caravan of hundreds of vehicles loaded with food, fuel, water, spare parts, and toilet paper. Her convoy followed the route that had already been rutted or churned up by the columns ahead, and every time a 5-ton truck hit a soft place and bottomed out, the 33 vehicles in Jessica's convoy dropped farther behind. Jessica just remembers a foreboding, a feeling that the convoy was staggering into enemy country without purpose or direction. 3 days into the mission, the convoy had dropped so far behind that it had lost radio contact with the rest of the column. One of the far-ahead convoys carried her boyfriend, Sergeant Reuben Contreras, who promised that he would look after her. The day they left Kuwait, his column had pulled out just ahead of hers, in plain view. Now he'd vanished in the distance along with the rest. The convoy shrank every day as the heavy trucks just sank to their axles in the sand and came apart. In just 2 days, the 33 vehicles in the convoy had dwindled to 18, and two of them were being towed by wreckers. One day it took 5 hours to lurch just 9 miles. To make up that distance in time, the soldiers in the 507th slept little or not at all. They were cooks, clerks, and mechanics. None of them tested in combat. They became bone-weary and sleepwalked through the days. Jessica began to wonder, if her truck broke down, would anyone even notice her at the side of the road? There was a lot to be afraid of here, but that was what she was most afraid of, whether it was reasonable or not. She was afraid of being left behind. "I hope that someone would see me, that someone would pick me up," she said. "Someone would stop. But you didn't know it. You didn't know." Everyone knew what Saddam's soldiers did to women captives. In her worst nightmares, she stood alone in the desert as the trucks of her own army pulled away. And her mind, which she struggled to keep clear as the days and nights faded together, she could see the Iraqis rise up out of the sand to come and get her. "I didn't want to be left out there. I didn't want to be left out there on my own. Even though stuff didn't look right with the convoy, it was better than being alone." It was not a paralyzing fear, nothing that stopped her from doing her duty. It was simple dread. A few days into their mission, as she rode with the sergeant, the transfer case in her 5-ton truck just busted, and they were stranded. As if in her finely tailored nightmare, the big trucks did just grind past. Not all of them had radios, only orders to push ahead, to make up the lost time. For a few bleak heartbeats, it looked as if her little girl's fear was real. Then a Humvee swerved off the road, and the driver beckoned to her. "Get in." It was Private First Class Lori Ann Piestewa, her best friend. The sergeant hopped in another truck, and they rolled on. A Hopi from Arizona who had been Jessica's roommate in El Paso. Lori was recovering from a dislocated shoulder and been given the choice of whether or not to deploy with her unit to Iraq.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?